Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views, the place for pets and their people who love them.
Aww, he's so soft.
Come here, boy.
Here is your host, practicing veterinarian, Veterinary News Network reporter, and host of the popular YouTube show, The Web DVM, Dr. Roger Welton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. I'm your host, Roger Welton, practicing veterinarian, coming to you live from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. The topic of tonight's show is corn phobia. So for those of you who have not heard of the term corn phobia, it is a term that is kind of being circulated amongst my veterinary colleagues. So a lot of average pet owners, regular pet owners don't know this particular term. So for those of you not familiar with the term corn phobia, I'm just going to define it for you and pay attention because you won't find this in Webster's or Wikipedia. Here's corn phobia. The general fear among certain pet owners that the feeding of corn as an integral component to most pet foods is the root of most diseases in dogs and cats. This assertion in most cases comes not from a veterinarian, but from correspondence with groomers, breeders, and homeopathic gurus, either in person or most commonly through internet forums. This notion often takes precedence in the minds of affected pet owners to the opinion of licensed veterinarians, even in circumstances where disease-specific nutrition is medically necessary to maintain the health and quality of life of a patient, and stated prescription diet is shunned or even dismissed because it contains corn. All right, so a little bit of a satire, but in all seriousness, this is a real trend that's gaining steam. You know, a lot of these things, these trendy notions that get out there among pet owners, among internet chat forums, they eventually fizzle out lots of times when people realize or, you know, bother to ask their vets or, you know, find some good integrity research that kind of dispels a lot of these things that just get out there. And so right now, though, this is picking up steam, this notion that corn is the root of all disease and that it's like the worst possible thing we could be feeding our dogs and cats. And really, it really cannot be further from the truth. And I just want to get into that tonight because this has got to stop. And please, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you out there that have some faith in what I tell you, that have some faith in my medical abilities and opinions, please listen tonight and indeed get the message out there. Let people know that corn is not something to be afraid of, except under very, very specific, very rare circumstances. So I'll get into that in just a moment. We have two questions to address tonight, email listener questions, and we're going to get to the first one of those in just a second. But before I do that, I would like to remind you this is a live call-in show. The number is 1-877-878-1435, 1-877-878-1435, and you are welcome to call me and contribute your questions or comments or anything else you'd like to say about tonight's episode. So right now, with no one on the queue, let's hear from Samantha. Samantha listed a question here that she sent, as I stated, through email, and she did not tell us where she's from. Folks, I like to just find out where people are calling from, so, you know, not a problem if you don't want to, but maybe she just forgot. I like to know where people are calling from, but Samantha from somewhere wrote the following. I have a Chihuahua with a swollen shut eye with clear discharge draining. I have done warm water flush. Is there anything else I can do at home for her? She is 9. She has had all her shots. Just can't get to the vet right now due to myself having cancer surgery. Well, Samantha, wish you the best of luck with your cancer surgery. I do caution folks that as far as our live call-in is concerned or the email comment, or if you post on our Facebook page or directly at our blog, you know, certainly I'm happy to answer your questions if you have questions. However, if it's, you know, a really pressing medical matter, you know, there's only so much I can do from this end. And your best option is to get veterinary care as soon as possible. I certainly appreciate that you've just had surgery yourself and are a bit incapacitated. There are veterinarians, a lot of them out there these days especially, that do house calls, that offer house call services. So certainly my first advice would be that if your dog has not yet been seen by a veterinarian for this problem, that indeed perhaps you may want to look into a house call veterinarian and just kind of Google that in your area or look in the phone book, whatnot. But at any rate, a swollen shut eye, that can mean a lot of different things. There could be a foreign body up in there, so some kind of piece of plastic or a piece of a stick, a grass on, any number of things could get jammed up in there. That certainly could cause the eyelid to swell. A corneal ulcer, so a scratch of the cornea or otherwise some kind of inflammation of the cornea, certainly can cause the eye to spasm shut. It's not so much that it's swollen shut, it kind of spasms shut. We call it blepharospasm. But I've seen bug bites, insect bites cause this as well. So, you know, I certainly would be speculating and telling you that I really know for certain what's going on with your dog. I will tell you this, that there's no downside to getting a drop called Gentil. Gentil is an ocular lubricant. It's kind of a semi-viscous compound that can help to relieve ocular pain if there's a inflammation. It can act as a Band-Aid and allow tissues to heal if there was a scratch on the cornea, for example. It can be soothing, and there's really no downside to using it. And you can get it at any pharmacy, and you probably want to put one drop in there 3 times a day. That's just a stopgap for you, though, Samantha. Please get your doggy to the vet as soon as possible. You don't want to play around with the eye. There are some things that happen to the eye that, you know, you only have a finite period of time to successfully treat it. So get your doggy to the vet ASAP, stopgap in terms of giving your dog some relief in the interim. Gentil drops would be a good thing to do. One drop in the eye 3 times a day, you might have to just kind of lift that eyelid a little bit to get in there. But again, I don't like practicing medicine over the phone. I certainly don't like to do it on the air. So, you know, if you're incapacitated, certainly try the house call option. A lot of vets do house calls. So that's our first question for tonight. And I just want to remind everybody that we are a live call-in show, 877-878-1435. For you folks that are watching on Blog TV, that number is listed in my chat room. And I really don't look at the chat room too much in terms of checking for the comments that are being thrown around in the chat room. Certainly you're welcome to chat amongst each other, but the number is listed in that chat room. So if you want to give us a call, 877-878-1435, you're certainly welcome to. So let's talk about little corn phobia here. Over the last few years, there's been this movement among pet owners that they are just bent on eliminating corn from the diets of their dogs and cats, that corn, for some reason, has certain qualities that are deleterious to dogs and cats, that it is the root of a lot of the disease that we see in dogs and cats, that pancreatic disease, bowel issues, skin disease, heart disease, eye disease, a lot of the things that even we consider congenital and strictly inheritable somehow can be linked to the feeding of corn. I don't know exactly how this started, but I have a little bit of an idea. But, you know, but before really getting to that part of it, I just want to talk about corn. Let's talk about corn. Why do we eat corn? Why do we put corn in diets? Well, as it turns out, corn is a great nutrient source. Corn has all kinds of stuff in it. There is actually a really nice source of amino acids, and amino acids are the building blocks for protein. So we can, and when I say we, I'm talking about not just us, but our dogs and our cats as well, can get a lot of amino acid benefit from corn, which ultimately builds proteins. And proteins are really the basic necessity for our tissues. Our tissues really are just merely collections of proteins. And so, you know, when you're talking about metabolic health, when you're talking about any kind of process in the body, we need proteins and we need amino acids to make that happen. We need amino acids to build protein in our muscles. So amino acids are very important, and we can get that from corn. And so what else do we see in corn? Beta-carotenes. Beta-carotenes are powerful antioxidants. So we love beta-carotenes. They're very important in keeping the immune system healthy, from slowing the aging process. So that's, you know, another very important thing. we also see corn as a very nice carbohydrate and fiber source. Fiber is, you know, far more important in dogs than it is in cats, but there are some cats that do benefit from fiber that need fiber. And dogs definitely need fiber. They need fiber as much as we do for their GI health. And so, you know, that's another benefit we're getting from corn. So those are the good things about corn. And when we go back and we know our history, we have Thanksgiving coming up that we're going to celebrate. What exactly is Thanksgiving? Thanksgiving is a celebration of the Indians, the Native Americans, that were helping the settlers. And those settlers were starving, and they were disease-ridden, and they were not weathering winter well. So what happened? The Native Americans came along, and they taught them about the wonderful crop of corn, the benefits of corn. So what are the benefits of corn? We just talked about that. Great nutrient source, immune system building, calorie building, fiber building, beta-carotene building. And what happened to these settlers once they figured out how to grow corn? They thrived. And next thing you know, the United States of America shows up, is formed, because the settlers were able to live in the harsh climate. They were able to feed themselves and their children. They were able to fight disease better. And the reason for that, a big reason for that, is corn. So when we look at, you know, the Native Americans, they developed this crop from a little tiny plant, and they called it maize. And they selectively cross-pollinated, and they turned it into a super corn, a super maize, that to this day we see this much, much larger version of it. And before the white man came along here to the New World, what was going on with Native Americans? Well, they were thriving. They didn't have disease problems. For the most part, they weren't dealing with famine. They had plentiful resources, and they were doing quite well. Yet white man came along with the tools that they had from Europe, and they didn't do quite as well because they didn't have corn. So, you know, again, I can't stress enough that corn is a great, great nutrient source, and I just want to ram that point home. So the naysayers of corn, this notion that corn is so dangerous, I believe started from mostly probably from breeders and groomers, non-medical people. I heard a lot about it, you know, among the grooming profession, because here's the thing. The whole grain-free craze includes corn-free as well, and that whole thing really just caught fire among the groomer and breeder community, because here's the deal. All of these foods, these quote-unquote holistic foods that are absent of corn, they can be sold by anybody who decides to become a dealer. So you can, you know, you can get an account with these quote-unquote holistic food companies if you're a groomer. And you can add that as your repertoire in terms of services you can provide. I can sell pet food now. And guess what? I sell that corn-free stuff because corn is terrible. Corn is so bad. And you know, where these people actually got that notion, and I'm not certain. Every now and then, there is a bona fide corn allergy. So, you know, allergies in dogs and cats can manifest either primarily with their bowels, so they can have bowel problems, vomiting, diarrhea, you know, things of that nature, weight loss. But what makes them a little bit unique, a little bit different from us, is it can also manifest in really bad skin problems and ear infections, skin infections, things of that nature. So, you know, in the end, there are bona fide cases. Realistically, corn is on, it's like number, like high 20, somewhere near 30, like 27 or 28, depending on the list you look at. But the bottom line, it's not really among the most common. The most common food allergy out there actually is beef. And so a lot of these corn-free foods are beef-based. And, you know, okay, well, you've eliminated corn, like number 28 on the food allergy list, but you're feeding the number one food allergy or allergen, which is beef. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense a lot of the times. Now, you know, in these cases where we're doing food elimination trials, things of that nature, we want to remove grains because it's part of the particular answer. And then what we do is we test feed where we start adding, you know, protein sources, nutrient sources back to the diet to figure out, okay, what is this patient specifically reacting to? So those cases of bona fide corn allergy, man, I can almost count on my two hands how many I can actually recall. It's not that common. So, you know, it's one of those things that, yeah, does it exist? Sure. And when it does exist, do you want to eliminate corn? Sure you do. But do you want to pay, you know, all that money for these corn-free foods? Because, it is a lot more expensive to make these foods when you don't have corn as an ingredient. It's a fairly inexpensive nutrient source. And so a lot of these foods are super, super expensive. So the mass hysteria over corn is just, it's not medically warranted, and I just want to be very, very clear about that. So let's talk about the corn-free diets a little bit, because this is something that you guys need to really, really know about. There is an organization known as AFCO, and now AFCO is sort of the governing body of pet food. And what AFCO does is they provide minimum standards of nutrition, minimum standards, and they also require that if you're going to get an AFCO label on your food, meaning that AFCO approves of it, AFCO is going to demand that a company that puts out a food can present objective, scientifically applied eating trials that at least indicate, if not prove, the claims on the label. All right, so many of these diets, and some of them are horrifically expensive. I mean, I just cannot believe the price of some of these diets. They're not AFCO diets. And so people are jumping on the bandwagon, buying these corn-free diets, and realistically, they have not been third-party monitored at all. They have not been, they've not undergone any scientific scrutiny whatsoever. And so they're just claiming they got this stuff on there. The FDA is, can be a bit loose when it comes to pet food. So without an AFCO label on there, folks, I would be very wary of buying a food that does not have that label. Secondly, let's talk about nutrient breakdown. So there's a certain amount of crude protein, a certain amount of crude fat, a certain amount of crude carbohydrate, crude fiber that should be present in pet foods. And it's going to be species specific as well. So, and also going to be life stage specific. So are we dealing with a puppy or an adult dog or a senior dog? Are we dealing with a kitten, an adult cat or a senior cat? That makes a difference. So you have your ideal nutrient breakdowns. So here's the other frustrating thing. I look at a lot of these diets. Their nutrient breakdown is atrocious. It's not species appropriate. It's not life stage appropriate. Here's the other thing that sticks in my craw. They claim to be all life stages, meaning that they're appropriate for every stage of the pet's life. That doesn't exist. A kitten's needs are going to be different from a cat's needs, from a senior cat's needs. Same for a dog. There's a rapid growth phase for the young pet. There is a maintenance phase for the adult pet. There is a deterioration phase for the senior pet where certain nutrients are going to be necessary. You need more of them. You're going to need less of others. For example, less fat because they're more prone to be obese. So I look at these diets. They have no AFCO label. A lot of them are just destroying these dogs with protein. Now, cats, we do know, need a higher percentage of protein than dogs and people do, but dogs should not be fed protein in excess of 25% of their daily intake for the most part. And for senior pets, you want even less of that. So, you know, when you're actually looking at the amount of protein in these diets that are hitting like 34, 35%, that's not good. And so a lot of folks will think, well, why would too much protein be bad for a dog? I'll tell you why. Protein has to be broken down into smaller chains to be metabolized and absorbed properly. It doesn't get absorbed when it remains in big chains, so it needs to be broken down. And then once the chains are absorbed, they're often broken down further into individual amino acids, and then they're reconstructed into the protein metabolism and tissue structures or enzymatic structures that are needed by the body in terms of protein. So there is a waste product associated with that entire process. That waste product is ammonia. Ammonia builds up in the system, and it has to be dealt with. Ammonia is toxic, so what do we do? Us and dogs and cats, the liver takes that ammonia and converts it into a substrate known as urea. And then urea then travels via the bloodstream to the kidneys and gets eliminated via the urine. So there's a lot of urea in the urine, hence the term urine. When you slam a dog with protein, you are, in effect, slamming him with ammonia, and you are increasing and taxing both the liver and the kidneys. You're overtaxing these organs, and you will, if you overtax organs, what happens? They crap out earlier in life on you. So, you know, this is not something to take lightly. They should not be eating protein in excess of 25%. And again, you know, my preference is, depending on life stage, somewhere between 18 and 22%. And any diet with an AFCO label would not have that much protein. So look for that AFCO label, A-F-C-O, AFCO. All right, very, very, very important. All right, and we're going to wrap things up about corn phobia shortly here. Got a little anecdote to tell you. But before we do that, let's get to our second listener question. I see on my chat here for Blog TV, there is actually a comment there. And I would say, guys, I do, by Blog TV folks, I do glance at the chat, and I do thank you for commenting. Now, I would actually advise you to actually, you know, call in and make your comment. But I'll just read this one real quick. And there are good brands that are marketed to the very specifics you just specified. That is a very good point. There are a lot of good brands with the AFCO label. And there's even ones without corn in them, if that's your preference. I wouldn't pay more money for eliminating corn unless, you know, there was a specific disease there that, you know, you were worried about with corn. But that is a very nice statement. I do thank that person for the comment. Julie from Cleveland, Ohio, wrote the following. With so many heartworm and flea and tick preventives out there, how does one choose which one to use? Are some better than others? What are your thoughts on these new all-in-one preventative medications? Are they for real? Can they really prevent for all that? Because they prevent so much, are they as safe as other products that are more specific in their preventive capabilities? Thanks so much. Julie from Cleveland. Okay, so there are a lot of preventives out there, and there's combination ones. There's, for example, Trifexis that's going to prevent for not just heartworm, but it's going to prevent for fleas very effectively. Really nice product. That product I think is great for, like, here in Florida, because fleas are a year-round problem. If you don't have a flea preventive on board, you're in big trouble. So I love Trifexis here. I would say the all-in-ones are not any less safe than the ones that, you know, are specific to just heartworm and intestinal parasites. How does one choose? I would say figure out what your problem is. You know, if you're just looking to prevent heartworm and, you know, up in Ohio, you don't have a big flea problem. Maybe you just want to use flea preventive during the flea-prone months, say, you know, May through October. That's what I used to do in New York, you know, with my own pets and with my patients. You know, that's something that you can do. It's going to be specific to what your problems are. So fleas are a year-round problem. That would be, you know, tough to picture in Ohio. Then, you know, maybe Trifexis is the way to go. But, you know, maybe you want to just go with a heart guard, spend less money, give your dog less medication, and, you know, come, say, May, and start your dog on Frontline because you got to prevent for fleas and ticks. So, you know, it's going to be very specific, but, you know, I wouldn't really stress too much about it. Think about what your issue is and then go from there. There are products that some vets favor over others, and that will also depend on where you live. It'll depend on what's endemic in your area, what kind of parasites are out there, what kind of critters are problematic. So it's one of those things that I would certainly talk to your vet about that as well. And, you know, really nice question, though. There are, you know, and as we get on in time here, there's going to be more and more choices out there. I think it's up to your vet to help you sift through them, and it's up to you to think about your pet's individual susceptibilities. But thank you for your question, Julie. I do appreciate you submitting that all the way from Cleveland, Ohio. And that's it for our email questions this evening. And for those of you who are a little bit shy and don't want to call in, our email is comments@web-dvm.net, comments@web-dvm.net. So, going on in our topic here, corn phobia, just was one last little anecdote to tell you before I wrap things up here. There was a kitty cat that's happened kind of, well, everything kind of reached its pinnacle recently, but we're going back about a year and a half. A year and a half ago, this college student brought in her cat, and the cat had severe urinary tract disease. We discovered that the kitty was making crystals, so passing microscopic crystals in its urine, and the crystals were irritating the bladder mucosa, the urethral mucosa, and over time, if the kitty keeps passing crystals, what happens is those crystals bind together, and then we have stones, and then we have surgery, right? So I told her, look, we can treat the infection with antibiotics. We can feed the correct diet. There is a prescription diet called Hill CD that I carry that is excellent for preventing these types of crystals. If you feed your cat this diet, she will not have problems again, or she will, you know, not likely have problems again. So sent her home on the diet. Don't see her for a while. And about a year later, she brings the cat in. The cat is just blood just, you know, oozing out of the urethra. I mean, she's not even urinating. The blood is just kind of pouring out. She doesn't look very good. And lo and behold, I take some x-rays of the bladder. There's stones all over the place. This cat needs surgery. So I look back in the notes and I mentioned to this young girl, I recommended the CD diet. Are you feeding that? And she said, well, no. You know, said it to me like, seriously, are you kidding me? I asked her, so why'd you refuse to feed the diet? This is the solution to all these issues. Well, hello, corn is the second ingredient. And I just sat there and I was dumbfounded. I could not believe that she picked crystals and now stones over corn. So I actually said to her, I said, look, you know, maybe you could have picked up the phone and called me, you know, asked me if I'm concerned about corn. You know, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Because in reality, it's not. But here's what is a big deal. Your cat has stones. Your cat has a bladder full of stones, and now we have to do surgery to get them out of there. This is going to cost you a lot more money than feeding this diet over the course of the last year would have cost you. So we did the surgery. Everything was fine. And her and her boyfriend came in to pick up the kitty. You know, everything went great. That part of it is definitely, there's a happy ending. I said to her, I asked her, I said, so are you going to go with the CD now? And she said, absolutely, absolutely. And the boyfriend said, we'll never make that mistake again. Well, she came in for a three-month recheck, and we checked her urine. Urine was free of crystals. Everything healed up beautifully. As it turns out, corn really wasn't the enemy there, was it? And that's really the message I want all you folks to take away from this, is that, you know, it's an unfounded fear. Don't be afraid of corn. Don't pay exorbitant amount of money for diets just because they claim to be corn-free. You know, and also when it comes to diets in general, look for that AFCO label, because without that AFCO label, there is really no oversight. There is no scrutiny of these diets. And so you want to just be careful. Just because somebody said so-and-so diet was great, and, you know, it's got no corn in it, you know, it doesn't mean go buy it. Look for the AFCO label. And then, of course, most importantly, folks, ask your veterinarian. You know, I mean, we went to vet school. We know a lot about this stuff. And I don't know why so many folks don't just pick up the phone and call their veterinarian. I mean, we're there for that information. We are there to help you steer through the health of your pet. And nutrition is a huge part of it. And so, you know, utilize that information source. You don't have to rely on forums. Yeah, forums are fun. Forums can get you neat information. Forums, I think, are a great thing, but don't rely on them, and certainly don't trust them over the opinions of your veterinarian. I would caution you on that, because that's how this all got started in the first place. Thank you so much for listening tonight, folks, and thank you, Blog TV folks, for watching the live streaming. Once I wrap things up here, I will kind of freelance with you guys here in a couple of minutes. But to my podcasters, thank you so much for listening. We won't be broadcasting next week, as it is Thanksgiving. We like to broadcast on Thursday evenings. But I will be back with you the Thursday after that. So have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everybody. And don't feed those pets from the table. That's going to cause big problems. Take care, and thank you, as always, for caring about what I have to say. Hey guys, I'm going to look at the chat in just a sec, my blog TV folks.
Taking charge of your future starts with taking the first steps. And saving up to $30 a month on Cox Internet with the Affordable Connectivity Program makes those steps easy to take. Whether they bring you to click upload on your first short film or join now for an online book club. Applying is easy. See if you qualify at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.